From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the ninth day of September 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net. We'll hear from the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, an announcement made about biofuels today, solar energy, and renewable fuels in general. And then as we close out our time together, Dana Cronin from Illinois Public Media will join us to discuss higher temperatures in the Midwest and what that means for animal agriculture. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, December corn today finished down a quarter of a cent at $5.10, the March at 5.19 and a quarter, half of a cent lower, and May futures down a penny and a quarter. That settled at $5.24 and three quarters. November beans, $12.70 and a half a bushel, 9 cents lower. January down 10 at $12.78 and three quarters. And the March contract, $12.84 for the soybeans, 11 cents lower. Bean meal up 20 cents, the bean oil for the day, down $1.40. Wheat futures, soft red December at 6.92 and a quarter, down 17 and a quarter. The hard red 22 lower at 6.82 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at 123.75, up 65 cents per 100 pounds. The feeder cattle at $159.25, 2.5 cents lower. And lean hogs in the October contract at $85.47.5, down $1.90. Crude oil at $68.19 a barrel, down $1.12. Diesel fuel at $2.11.04, that's heating oil, down 2 2/10 of a cent, and the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.09.9 of a cent, down 3 2/10 of a cent for the day. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to talk about what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us. First, can you update me on what conditions are like there on the farm in Shelby County, Illinois?
Yeah, you know, there's a few people scratching around a little bit, trying to get out in the field. You're hearing about some low to mid 20s, percentage on moisture. And, you know, we're not getting a whole lot on yield yet, but I have talked to a handful of producers. Of course, they don't like being quoted, but, you know, feel pretty darn good about where yields have started. But, we haven't heard anything extravagantly high, you know, like some of these people thinking they were going to see all 250 and above. And so, we haven't done anything yet. I'm assuming that we'll be harvesting at some point next week. If nothing else, we're going to have to cut some beans. But I'm sure hoping that we'll be able to get in the field and pick some corn first.
Tell me about the struggles that the CME group has had over the last week or so as it's been dealing with the aftermath of Ida, the hurricane that went through New Orleans, and the port struggles there.
You know, that's the thing, is that you continue to hear, first of all, about first we heard it could be several weeks, and then this week we're seeing some movement. We're hearing about some of the folks being able to get up and going, but at the same time, we're definitely not running full speed ahead yet. And there's still a lot of questions as to barges that sunk, a couple of vessels that actually got stuck. And so bottom line is we're not totally running on full cylinders yet, but I think the way that this looks, we're going to be able to get up and going maybe a little quicker than what we originally thought. I think there's also going to, of course, be a fair amount of angst mixed in heading into this report on Friday due to the fact that the average trade guesses are essentially calling for, I would say, somewhat of a bearish lean to the report.
Yeah, the Ida, the storm, was large enough that it caused U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and the head of the World Agricultural Outlook Board to talk about it as it relates to the exports, especially for the coming year. Head of the World Ag Outlook Board saying simply that not likely to have that much of an impact because we're just at the beginning of the year. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, we were essentially winding up, as far as the old marketing year was concerned. Export inspections had dwindled significantly already. And quite frankly, if you were asking to have the time of year maybe where something like that would happen, which we would never want it to happen, but it might be towards the end of your marketing year, in a year whenever you don't have a whole lot left to export. And so, I guess the soybean export program needs to be up and going and ready to rock and roll soon, because we know that once beans get harvested in earnest in the U.S., that is prime opportunity for U.S. export inspections. And so That time isn't quite here yet, given that soybean harvest has not started in earnest yet, but it certainly will be starting within the next week to 10 days. So I would say that we would have a fair amount of beans that we could put out on the export market within the next 3 weeks. And so you got to hope that we're running pretty close to full capacity by then.
Yesterday afternoon, the United States FSA, I'm sorry, FSA, the Farm Service Agency, released by accident its updated acreage data. Did you see anything of interest in that dump? And they left it out simply because the acreage is supposed to be updated by USDA today. They use some of the FSA numbers to help that make that calculation. Did it give you any insight into what you think tomorrow's WASDE will contain?
Well, essentially, you've got to make the assumption that acreage is going to go up. So I believe they were showing around 900,000 more than what we saw there in August. I don't know that you're going to see that much more on harvested acreage. I know that, in the area of the country where you see a significant amount of chopping for silage, is some of the areas where we've seen the most dryness. And so the producers that we've talked to, continue to talk about the fact that they're having to chop a whole lot more this year. So in the end game, my personal opinion is we're not going to see big acreage increases now for tomorrow. Anything from a half million to a million or a little more, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. And I guess my personal lean is that they might raise corn, yield a little bit. I don't know that it's going to raise a ton, but you continue to hear about a lot of issues coming in as far as disease and health of corn. So who knows what they'll come in on yield, but I've got to think total production is certainly going to come up. And I would think at least a couple hundred million bushels, but maybe it'll be more than that.
I have one production agriculture question for you that you may be able to answer. And I think this will be far more prevalent in your part of the world than it is to the north. Have fall armyworms become a problem for soybean at all? I know for pastures, for lawns and such, certainly they have, but they also feed on the soybean.
We've heard a little bit of it, but not near as much as what we've heard, away from here, so to speak. So, I talked to a few agronomists. One of the guys that I do business with, actually on the seed side of things, got in some of our fields. Certainly didn't see anything that caused too much alarm. And so, I don't think it's going to be something we're going to have a big impact from. But, if I had beans that were still green as a gourd, I'd probably be maybe just a little bit more concerned than what I am currently. So, we plant all of our beans early. In April, and pretty much every bean that we've got is at least starting to turn. So, you may have a hard time getting a hold of me here in a couple of weeks, but we're going to be super busy because we're going to have a lot of beans come together all at the same time.
Indeed. Any final word on the marketplace before we get to those USDA reports tomorrow and, of course, for this afternoon?
Yeah, we just got to keep things in perspective. I think we've taken quite a hit in the month of August, and everyone's lean and bearish here, so you need a fairly bearish report, I think, to continue lower. Whereas, if you get a friendly to neutral report, maybe you see a little bit of rebound in here.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. He'll be back for Commodity Week, but we won't record that this afternoon because of the WASDE and the crop production reports due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. You'll hear Commodity Week tomorrow afternoon on our home station and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. And of course, it's usually up online at willag.org on Thursday evening. Not tonight, though. It'll be up tomorrow afternoon after we get through the USDA reports. You can find those numbers on our website, by the way, at 11 a.m. Central Time at willag.org, willag.org. Over the noon hour today, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced investments of $464 million in renewable energy infrastructure, including a solar farm here in the state of Illinois, and a way to make ethanol plants a bit more energy efficient, that one in North Dakota. You'll hear about both of those in this excerpt from the press conference.
I think there's a recognition and appreciation that climate smart infrastructure can lower energy costs for rural small businesses and farming operations. It can also spur economic development, which can support jobs and provides the opportunity for lower electric rates, which obviously makes it easier to attract new businesses. And that's why these announcements today are a continuation of USDA's investment in climate smart infrastructure. We're announcing today a total of $464 million to be invested in rural America in climate smart infrastructure. This investment is finds its way through two different programs that USDA operates. The first program is the Renewable Energy for America program. Under this program, we're announcing today roughly $128 million in low-cost loans and grants that will be funding renewable energy projects and energy efficiency projects on the farm. The $128 million that's being provided today represents 12 loans of $121.2 million and 411 grants totaling a little over $7.4 million. The combination of these renewable energy projects and energy efficiency projects will essentially save the equivalent of 379 million kilowatt hours of electricity, which is enough essentially to fuel and take care of the needs of over 35,000 homes. 48 states and Puerto Rico will see some investment under the REAP program being announced today. In addition, we also are announcing under our electric loan program an additional $325 million in loans that will go into projects in a variety of states, including Arkansas, Georgia, Illinois, Missouri, North Dakota, and Oklahoma. These projects help to improve the efficiency of nearly 1,500 miles of electric lines, which will increase the reliability and provide for a more resilient system. A part of this will also go, approximately $102 million, is going to go towards the investment of smart grid technology. Just to give you a sense of the of a couple of the projects that are going to be funded with these resources, Red Trail Energy, LLC, is taking $25 million from USDA and providing an opportunity for an expansion of a carbon capture and storage facility connected to an ethanol plant. This is going to result in somewhere between a 40 and 50% reduction of the carbon intensity of ethanol production at this facility, which will allow that facility, obviously, to continue to provide low-carbon biofuel. Prairie State Solar, LLC, is taking $95 million and essentially creating a 99-megawatt photovoltaic farm on 621 acres. And this farm's already, as a result, has already been able to enter into a long-standing purchase agreement for the power and electricity that's going to be generated from the solar farm. This gives you an example of the kinds of activities that we are investing in. And obviously, the scope and the intent and the expansion and the opportunity to continue to do more of this is very much linked to the ability of Congress to continue its work on both the Bipartisan Infrastructure and Jobs Bill and also the Reconciliation Bill, which will continue to provide resources for investment in climate-smart technologies.
Again, that was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack speaking over the noon hour Central Time to the press about some $464 million in renewable energy infrastructure grants and loans that were made available today by USDA, one of those making its way to the state of Illinois in Perry County for a solar farm. During the press conference, the secretary was asked about the Biden administration's support for renewable fuels like ethanol and whether it was really very strong, because some in that sector are not certain that's the case.
I really appreciate the question about the biofuels, because I think it gives me an opportunity to showcase and to emphasize that there are a lot of ways in which an administration can provide help and assistance to the biofuel industry. First and foremost, it can provide stability in that industry from the standpoint that it doesn't grant, as the previous administration did, a series of waivers that undercut the renewable fuel standard. The EPA Administrator, Michael Regan, has gone on record as saying that that is not the intent of the EPA under his leadership, and that we certainly support that. Secondly, as we've announced as part of our pandemic assistance and Build Back Better effort, We are in the process of finalizing plans to provide $700 million of assistance to the biofuel industry because they didn't receive benefits under the previous COVID packages in the previous administration. We are utilizing some of the resources that will be provided and have been provided under the American Rescue Plan and COVID packages, basically to provide that additional help and assistance. In addition to that, we are also having an opportunity to provide additional support for the infrastructure necessary to make sure that higher blends are more readily available to consumers, providing some infrastructure funding that's going to be announced very, very shortly. We're also continuing to promote exports. In our conversations and discussions with ag leaders from around the world, and we're also looking forward to working collaboratively with our sister agencies on expanding opportunities in the biofuel area. We think that there are enormous opportunities in aviation and marine fuel that have yet to be tapped fully and completely. So we look forward to some announcements there in the very near future that will indicate and reflect an investment in that. And that part of the biofuel industry. So you look at the totality of it all, and you look at the investment, for example, that we're making today at Red Trail Energy, which is an investment in a bioethanol production facility to allow it to capture the CO2 from the production process and store that. And you can see that there's a wide range of ways in which an administration can provide help and assistance to the biofuel industry. And so I think folks need to be a bit patient, and I think they need to be understanding, and they need to look more deeply into what an administration is doing before they jump to a conclusion that it's not being supported.
Their U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was making the case that the Biden administration has been supporting the biofuels industry, including ethanol. He was also asked about methane digesters and whether there happened to be any money for those in this latest round of $464 million. Methane digesters can be used to capture gases from the waste from large and small animal farms.
The administration, since January 20th, has invested in 18 biodigester projects. I can check to see whether or not this particular set of announcements includes a digester project, but I can tell you that 18 projects have already been funded since January 20th on the digester side.
Methane digesters capture and create energy from animal agriculture. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was speaking about those and other renewable energy sources that the agency funded to the tune of some $464 million today. Well, on that note, let's stay with livestock for the afternoon. Dana Cronin of Illinois Public Media and Harvest Public Radio looked into the changing climate and how warmer temperatures are impacting animal agriculture.
It's feeding time on Borgic Farms in Raymond, Illinois. Hundreds of 12-week-old pigs are crammed into a long barn, climbing over each other in search of feed. It's pushing 90 degrees today, and the air here is humid and heavy with the smell of pig manure. Phil Borgic owns this farm. He just turned on 8 massive cooling fans with 6-foot blades to suck the hot air out of the barn.
And then if the temperature comes up like this afternoon and where it gets warm enough, then we'll turn on those waters. But the first thing that comes is a breeze, and then it gets warmer yet, then we bring out the garden hose and hose down the kids and cool them off.
Borgic's parents bought the farm in the 1950s, when most livestock farming was done outside. They've since moved things indoors to help control the effects of increased temperatures on the pigs.
As we went through time, our fans kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger to pull more air through and over the top of the pigs and to get that heat out of there. And then right at the beginning, we didn't add water. And so as we learned, we started adding that sprinkle water then to help cool them off some more.
keeping the animals cool is essential, not just for their comfort and health, but also for their productivity. Amanda Stone researches heat stress in dairy cows at Mississippi State University and says milk production can decrease a whopping 25% when cows are too hot.
So if a cow is producing 100 pounds during periods of heat stress, she's only producing 75 pounds.
And it's not just cows, it's goats, too. Every morning at 5 a.m., the 100-plus goats here at Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery outside Champaign, Illinois, file in for milking. Milk meters measure how much each goat produces per day. When it's hot, farm co-owner Wes Jarrell says there's less milk, and he has noticed the changing climate is having an impact.
We've always known that in the summer heat, their production goes down. And we know just by looking at the records that the duration of that and the intensity of that is increasing.
Prairie Fruits Farm is pasture-based, meaning the goats spend most of their time outside grazing on acres of grass and shrubs. Like dogs, Jarrell says goats pant when they get too hot and take cover in the shade under trees. And while the farm does have a couple of small barns, he says they're making plans to build a bigger indoor facility, in part because it's getting harder to keep the goats cool enough.
In the summer, when it's going to be hotter and more humid, we need the best ventilation possible, and we need protection.
The price tag on that new barn is nearly $700,000. Climate experts predict that if we continue emitting greenhouse gases at the current rate, most of the summer in Illinois will consist of so-called dangerous heat days. And while that might make the $700,000 barn worthwhile, Jarrell says they'll have to find a way to pay for it. And there are few options.
Obviously, what we need to do is make sure we can sell the product and we can look at what customers are willing to pay.
So don't be surprised when you start paying a little more for your milk, pork, or goat cheese. It may just be another cost of doing business in a changing climate. I'm Dana Cronin, Harvest Public Media.
I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. One quick note. Tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture will update the world agricultural supply and demand estimates along with the crop production figures for both corn and soybeans at 11 a.m. You can find those on our website at willag.org or by looking me up in Twitter. My handle is at Commodity Week, and that also means that we will not post Commodity Week this afternoon to our website. We won't record that until after those reports are out tomorrow. You'll hear it on this radio station and many of these radio stations either tomorrow or over the weekend.